This is Ocean Robbins, and I am here to welcome you to Day 5 of the Food Revolution Summit. Today's topic is the science of healthy eating, how the latest scientific breakthroughs can help you thrive. In a few moments, we'll hear from Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine founder Dr. Neil Barnard. In an hour, we'll hear from registered dietitian and award-winning author Brenda Davis. An hour after that, we'll hear from China Study Director and best-selling author, Dr. T. Colin Campbell. Here we go.
Welcome to the Food Revolution Summit, where we explore how you can heal your body and your world with food. This is Ocean Robbins, and I am joined by my dad and colleague, John Robbins, in welcoming our guest, Dr. Neil Barnard. Dr. Neil Barnard is a clinical researcher, a best-selling author, and one of America's leading advocates for health, nutrition, and higher standards in research. He's an adjunct associate professor of medicine at the George Washington University School of Medicine in Washington, D.C., and the president of the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, whose membership includes 150,000 healthcare professionals and concerned citizens. Dr. Barnard is the author of more than 50 published research papers on nutrition and its impact on human health, and more than 15 books, including Power Foods for the Brain, The 21-Day Weight Loss Kickstart, and Dr. Neil Barnard's Program for Reversing Diabetes. He's been a frequent guest on Dr. Oz, Ellen, and many other talk shows, and he's a voice of sanity and health for our times. So now, Dr. Barnard, my dad and I are so grateful for your work, and we're so excited to have this time with you. And now for the interview, I'm going to hand it over to my dad, John Robbins.
Thank you, Ocean, and thank you, Neil, for being with us again. Your voice, your wisdom, it's a joy to bring you and what you have to say to our listeners. I thought of
you recently
because you've written Power Foods for the Brain, which helps people to protect their minds and strengthen their memories. And I thought of you last December when a 23-year-old Swedish man won the World Memory Championship. And he not only won it, he achieved the highest score in the history of the World Memory Championships. His mental faculties are nothing less than astounding. Did it surprise you to learn that he's a vegan?
I have to say it was an amazing thing to see. This, you're speaking of Jonas von Essen, who went to London, and people from all over the world, they go to compete, and it's an amazing thing to see. These are people who can memorize an entire pack of cards in 30 seconds, and they do other memory feats. And after he was crowned the champion with the best all-around memory of anybody, they said, "What are you going to do?" And he said, "I need to find a vegan cupcake shop." I thought it was so terrific. So, it's not entirely a surprise because, as you know, there are many things about a plant-based diet that are good for every part of your body and especially brain function. You're getting rid of the things that can be harmful, and you're packing your diet with things that can be protective and helpful.
Are there particular foods that people should consume or should avoid if they want to enhance their cognitive abilities and reduce their risk of things like dementia?
Yes, there are. On the bad side is something that I learned about as a kid growing up in North Dakota. My mom had five kids, and we would get out of bed in the morning to the smell of bacon, and she would be cooking up bacon, and I remember vividly her saving the bacon grease in a jar and putting it on the shelf. And the thing that was most noteworthy is that as bacon grease cools down, it turns into this waxy solid. And then the next day she would spoon it into the frying pan to fry eggs in it. The fact that it's a solid fat, this waxy fat, that means it's very high in saturated fat. And in 1993, the Chicago Health and Aging Project got started. They interviewed thousands of people in Chicago. They were all healthy at that time, but they tracked what they ate. And as time went on, something became very clear. And that's that people who were eating the most bad fats not just bacon grease, but any source of saturated fat, whether you think of it as dairy fat, like cheese, or chicken fat. Chicken has a surprising amount of fat in it, or even fat from fish or fryer grease. The trans fats had 3 to up to 5 times higher risk of developing Alzheimer's compared to people who avoided those bad fats. So as I look at my diet as a kid and as an adolescent and young adult, that's what we ate. And then I think back about my grandparents. All of them developed severe problems with their memories and died with dementia. And I think, well, maybe if my grandfather and grandmother hadn't been raising cattle all those years and their Midwestern farm and eating that, maybe their story would have been very, very different. So number one to get away from is the saturated fat. But you also asked about things that we want to bring into the diet. And just very quickly, I might mention a couple of things. Green leafy vegetables are loaded with folate. It's a B vitamin. It gets its name from foliage, as in green leafy vegetables. Folate helps protect the brain. B6 is a vitamin in bananas, in beans. Vitamin B12 is something that, frankly, the best source of it is any typical supplement. But those three B vitamins, folate, B6, and B12, help the brain to rid itself, to clean out a toxin called homocysteine that builds up in the brain from normal metabolism. And when you get rid of it, your risk of developing Alzheimer's diminishes too. So that's just for starters. There's a lot more. But to answer your question, there are some bad things you want to get away from, especially the bad fats. There's some good things you want to pack in, especially your green vegetables and beans and bananas and other healthy foods.
Well, when you mention greens and they're high in folate, and that helps with homocysteine levels, I think of how often we have foods that have added folic acid to them. Does folic acid as an isolated nutrient do the same thing for the body as eating dark green leafy vegetables which provide folate?
You know, it's a $64,000 question. I think it's a sensible thing to be supplementing folate in food. The reason for it was that there are birth defects that can be prevented by the addition of folate supplements. And so what was done was that something similar to folate called folic acid is added to a number of foods, and it prevents a birth defect called neural tube defects in kids. And it does that, and that's good. However, we've learned a lesson that supplementing isn't the same as getting vitamins from foods themselves. We learned this lesson with beta carotene. Long ago, it became clear that people who ate foods rich in beta carotene had a lower cancer risk. So if people were eating carrots and sweet potatoes and other foods that were loaded with beta carotene, you'd look at these people, they had less risk of cancer, significantly less. So researchers said, well, let's see if a supplement will do the same thing. They tested a beta-carotene supplement, but in order to have people who had high risk of developing cancer and maybe could be helped by this supplement, they chose smokers. They said, if we do this study over 5 years, 6 years, 7 years, some of these smokers will get cancer. Let's see if the beta-carotene stops it. Well, the beta-carotene supplements turned out to increase their cancer risk. The people who were taking the beta carotene had more cancer than the people who were taking a placebo. Well, what's going on here? Beta carotene, it's just one of hundreds of different carotenoids that are in foods. And if you're taking just one of them, it might reduce your absorption of the others, and it throws it all out of balance. And so you're worse off than if you hadn't been taking it at all. And they then looked at the group that was taking the placebo pill, the dummy pill. Among that group, those who got the most beta-carotene in foods did have some protection, but the pill, no good. Same with vitamin E. You can get vitamin E in a pill, but it doesn't have the 8 forms of vitamin E that occur in almonds, walnuts, sesame seeds, sunflower seeds, you name it. So forgive me for this long-winded answer, but generally speaking, you're better off getting vitamins from foods. The one exception I make is B12, because B12 is not made by animals or plants. It is made by bacteria. And people have said, well, maybe the bacteria on our fingers in the soil gives us the tiny trace that the body needs. Maybe so. Meat eaters get some B12 because the bacteria in a cow's intestinal tract will make it. But that B12 as it goes into the animal's bloodstream and adheres to the meat, it's stuck to the protein in the meat, and it's rather challenging for some people to actually absorb it. People who don't make enough stomach acid, people who are on certain medications, people who are up in years, they're not absorbing that. And so B12 is the one case where a supplement is more absorbable and better for you than trying to get it from food. So I recommend that everybody take a B12 supplement. Other than that, vitamin E, beta carotene, get it from food.
Excellent answer. I want to shift gears a little bit. We've learned in the last maybe 30 years of cardiovascular research, we know now with certainty that impeded blood flow is a condition that can be reversed. Arteries literally open up again when people adopt a low-fat, whole foods, plant-strong diet. Dr. Dean Ornish, Dr. Caldwell Esselstyn, both of whom are speakers in this Food Revolution Summit along with you, have repeatedly published their research in peer-reviewed journals. The results are so conclusive that Medicare now covers the Ornish program. Meanwhile, erectile dysfunction, commonly called ED, appears to be increasingly common among men of all ages. If decreased blood flow related to poor vascular health is the underlying problem for a man suffering from ED, then would the same dietary changes that have been proven to reverse heart disease, that have been proven to open up the arteries feeding the heart, would that also open up arteries elsewhere in the body, including those feeding the penis?
Yes. Not only does it happen theoretically, as you know, we've been studying plant-based diets for a long time, and we are now in the middle of a study in diabetes where people who have had what I might call sort of late-stage diabetes to the point where it's affecting their nerves and they're getting numb in their feet, they've been coming to our office, and we've been giving them a plant-based diet. And one of the participants was quite heavy, and he had been on a meaty diet, and he had not only gained a lot of weight, but he had diabetes, and it was getting bad, and it was really affecting him in many ways. Well, as the study went on, and he adopted a totally vegan diet, plant-based diet, did really well. He was losing weight like crazy. He lost 20 pounds, 30 pounds, 40 pounds. His energy was up. He came in one day and he said, you know, my neuropathy is dramatically better. I'm talking about the pain that he was feeling was way better. And about 2 weeks after that, he came in, he said, better still, my erectile dysfunction is gone. So it was kind of high fives all the way around. So what you said is exactly right. When a guy at 50 years of age has erectile dysfunction, it's not caused by performance anxiety. It's caused by low blood flow because the genitals are kind of a hydraulic device, obviously devised on a Monday because everything's going wrong with it all the time. You just need to improve the blood flow, and that will improve. By the way, let me give you a couple of new things that I wanted to mention to you, John, and to Ocean. What is it that's narrowing the arteries? Partly it's the fact that a meaty diet and the dairy products and eggs, the cholesterol and fat in these cause a higher cholesterol level, but they also tend to increase blood pressure, and that aggravates the arterial narrowing. Well, just yesterday, JAMA Internal Medicine published an article by our group and some other researchers we were working with in Japan, where we did a meta-analysis of every study ever done on vegetarian diets and blood pressure, and we showed conclusively that when people go to a vegetarian diet, it does reduce both systolic and diastolic blood pressure. That's the top number and the bottom number. Secondly, just last week, the journal Nutrients published an article from us saying that when we are assessing risk factors for developing diabetes, which also contributes to that same artery narrowing, that the current risk factors are older age, higher body mass index, if you're Hispanic, if you're African American, these are risk factors. Well, we published an article saying that meat eating ought to be a risk factor too, that doctors ought to assess, because doctors do know that if two people come in to the clinic and one is a meat eater and the other is not, the meat eater is at much higher risk of developing diabetes compared to the other. So, yes, when people make changes, it helps their blood flow, partly because it reduces the diabetes risk, partly because it reduces their blood pressure, it brings their weight down, but as Dr. Orna showed, the arteries just start opening up again on their own, without surgery, without medication. So it's a great thing to see.
have there been any studies that looked specifically at the effect of helpful dietary changes on ED?
Yeah, there have been some. And they've even shown that even if the diet is sort of semi-vegetarian, it does help. There haven't been a lot of studies, but there, in fact, have been some. So we have both anecdotal evidence and study evidence that it does help.
Viagra is such a billion-dollar drug, and there are similar ones that are also making those kinds of sales figures. And they have side effects. They're expensive, and they have side effects. But they're profitable. I can't imagine if dietary changes were as profitable to the drug companies as selling these drugs are. I think we'd have more studies, and I think we'd find that the dietary changes don't have any side effects except positive ones.
Well, you know, Viagra is an effective treatment for erectile dysfunction. So is a good, solid dietary change. Let me be clear, though. Switching from beef to chicken is not going to do it. You've really got to go to a plant-based diet to really get the best effect. But can you imagine if Viagra not only affected erectile dysfunction, but it also trimmed your waistline, made you look sexier, gave you more energy so that you're not just falling asleep at 7 o'clock? That's what a plant-based diet do. All the side effects are good ones.
It's such a wonderful message to bring to people because it can enhance their lives in so many positive ways, and the side effects, as you mentioned, are all positive ones as well. I'm thinking about a food that is often considered to be a health food. I'm thinking about yogurt. There have been recent yogurt ads that imply that eating the particular brand would make a man into an Adonis, and yet studies show that men who eat the most yogurt have a considerably higher risk. One study I saw showed a 52% higher risk of prostate cancer, a disease that, when treated, can lead to impotence and incontinence. These are not qualities we normally associate with manliness. What's your view on yogurt?
I'm troubled about it for exactly the reason that you mentioned, and what you said is true. Yogurt is heavily, heavily marketed. And often it's not the yogurt itself that they're pushing. They're saying it might be the probiotics that are added to it. Well, those are just added with a shovel and a bucket in the factory, figuratively speaking. In other words, they're not part of the yogurt product initially. They're just an addition, and you can get probiotics at any health food store without the yogurt. But we're concerned about it. Prostate cancer is probably the most worrisome. And it's not just yogurt. It's any dairy product. At Harvard, the Physicians Health Study tracked 21,000 physicians. Those who consumed 2 milk servings per day on average had about a 34% increased risk of developing prostate cancer. This study was alarming, but not alone. A larger study called the Health Professionals Follow-Up Study, 48,000 health professionals, same story. Those people who had the most dairy intake had about a 60% increased risk of developing prostate cancer. And what we think is going on is that when you swallow milk products, whether it's yogurt or cheese or cow's milk, whatever, something happens in your body that also happens in the calf's body when a calf is drinking mother's milk. It's that the blood level of a substance called IGF-1, insulin-like growth factor number 1, increases in the blood, and in an infant that stimulates growth, which is a good thing. But in an adult, it can stimulate the growth of cancer cells. And if you mix it with prostate cancer cells or breast cancer cells in a test tube, they grow like crazy. So we think it's a real mistake. And weaning is a good idea. That's why nature has every species weaned. But we've been seeing all the major dairy companies have been pushing yogurt like crazy. It's a mistake. They should not be doing it.
We live in a day when food manufacturers and restaurant chains routinely spend billions of dollars on misleading ads and other efforts to push the public and children in particular into eating unhealthy foods. Your organization, PCRM, Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, cited Dannon with the SICK Award following the last Super Bowl. The SICK Award stands for Social Irresponsibility Towards Consumers and Kids. Why did PCRM give this dubious award to Dannon?
Well, Dannon has been really just off the scale because they've been promoting this idea that yogurt is this healthful snack. However, it's high sugar, high calorie, and it's really comparable to, it's basically selling like ice cream or pudding and saying that it's somehow a healthy food. It's not. And in our view, it's a complete nutritional fumble. The Danone company was not just interested in promoting it a little bit. They soaked just millions and millions and millions of dollars in it. But Danone also had to pay out about $50 million in settlements related to false advertising in the past, related to its probiotic content before. So our feeling is that the Danone company has just been taking it too far. They need to clean up their act. They could get into promoting soy yogurts if they wanted to. They would certainly be a lot more healthful. And so far, they haven't done that. So, yeah, we gave them the SICK award. And if people are interested, you'll see that at our website, pcrm.org.
You mentioned legal consequences to the company for false advertising. Can you say more about what happened there?
Yes, exactly. Danone was cited for what was called false advertising. This was back in 2009 and 2010 that related to the probiotic content of its products. And they had to pay out more than $50 million in settlements related to that. But, you know, the dairy industry has, they've been very aggressive. You might remember a few years ago, the dairy industry said if you consume milk, you'll lose weight. The idea was if you're on a weight loss diet, low-calorie diet, if milk is part of the diet, you'll lose more weight than if milk isn't part of the diet. That was the claim. And they got celebrities. Dr. Phil, many others, were filmed with milk mustaches saying, this is my way to lose the weight. Well, we, Physicians Committee, went to the Federal Trade Commission and said, this is simply not true. Dairy products can't somehow break the laws of thermodynamics so that suggests that somehow they have a magical weight loss effect. They don't. And years went by. We gave this petition. They were running ads week after week. Finally, the Federal Trade Commission wrote to us and said that in the interim, after they had received our complaint, they had sat down with the dairy industry, they had reviewed the evidence, and they felt that there was just not enough evidence for the dairy industry to be justified in making any claim that you can lose weight with it. You just can't. There's a new study out right now. I just saw it about 2 weeks ago. You know the old idea that dairy builds strong bones. New study showed that kids who drink the most milk, as they reach adolescence and adulthood, that milk does not protect them against bone breaks later on. It doesn't do anything. The milk-drinking kids have no benefit whatsoever. If anything, they might have a slightly higher risk of fracture. And at the end of life, in older folks where you're really worried about a hip fracture, milk-drinking men or women get zero benefit. They are not going to be any less likely to develop a hip fracture compared to people who don't consume milk at all. So they've been playing fast and loose with the facts because they're trying to sell a commercial product. They're not trying to be scientifically responsible.
The World Health Organization recently released a report with some rather bleak predictions. They said that cancer cases worldwide are expected to increase by 70% in the next 20 years. When I first read that, my heart sunk because I know how much human suffering that entails. But I'm also thinking about a study that was published last December in the journal Nutrients. Researchers writing in that study had analyzed data on 21 different types of cancer in 157 countries. It's a big study. And they found the association between the consumption of animal products and cancer to be as strong as that linking tobacco and cancer.
Yes, that's right. And if you think about it, you know, once people come up with these associations, they discover that meat eaters have more cancer, people who consume dairy have more prostate cancer, then the next question is, why? Because if you can connect the dots and see what it is that causes the cancer, you start to understand it. And that's why with, say, tobacco smoke, there's been a big effort to try to understand in tobacco, is it the benzoapyrene in the smoke that causes the cancer? What exactly is it? So when it comes to food, what could it be? Well, meats, dairy products, these foods affect hormone levels in an adverse way. They tend to cause hormones to go awry. But that's not the only reason. When you cook meat in a fry pan, in your oven, the heat that is applied to the meat causes a chemical change in the meat, causing the formation of compounds called heterocyclic amines. They can cause cancer in a wide variety of organs. Meat is very high in a certain form of iron called heme iron that people think, well, that's great, that's a good source of iron. Well, not so great because it's linked to colorectal cancer. The processed meats, they contain nitrates that are reputed to be carcinogenic, although there's still ongoing research here. So it's not just that we know that in the same way that smokers have more lung cancer, meat eaters have more colon cancer, as a good example. People who consume dairy have more prostate cancer. But we're going a step further and finding out why that is. And once we know why it is, then people stop saying, well, you're only for a plant-based diet because you want the earth to breathe easier. Or you only want a plant-based diet because you're tired of hearing that a million animals are consumed every hour in America. Or you're only trying to do it for heart health, or you're only doing it to have a slimmer waistline. We now know that there are so many good reasons for getting the animal products off your plate and filling your plate with vegetables and fruits and whole grains and beans and all the foods that they can turn into when we have the mechanisms. I think the argument is over, and it's really just a question of how soon people can grab a hold of these changes and bring them into their families.
And bring them into their lives in every way. I'm thinking about the enormous financial toll that obesity and diabetes and cardiovascular disease and all the other diet-related diseases exact. And much of that is, at least in the United States, borne by employers. Tell us about the GEICO study.
Yeah. Back in 2007, we began, as I look out my window in my office here in Washington, I see GEICO's national headquarters, you know, the car insurance company. And I got to talking to the head of their health service in 2007, and we got the idea of trying to see if a plant-based diet would help in the work setting in the same way as we know it helps in the research setting. So we did two things. The first thing is that we provided vegan food, plant-based food, in the GEICO cafeteria. So they had bacon cheeseburgers, but they also had the veggie burger. And they might have scrambled eggs for breakfast, but they also had an oatmeal bar, for example. So the first thing was to provide the foods for people who wanted them. The second thing was that once a week, anybody who wanted to go vegan would be able to go to a support class. It was really like a cooking class, but we'd go around the room and everyone would talk about what challenges they had coming up and they'd support each other and everyone really liked it. Well, what we found is that as time went on, people lost weight, and even though the study went right through Thanksgiving, instead of gaining weight, people lost weight. They were slimmer after Thanksgiving than they were before. Cholesterol levels fell. People who had diabetes, it got better. So that was a big success. And so then after that, we did a new study with GEICO, but this time it was in 10 different cities. They have plants all around the country. And the same thing happened. We had about 300 people who are our research participants. We put them on the scale. We tracked their weight and their cholesterol and their blood sugars. They got dramatically better. We realized that if we're going to help people change their diets, you've got to go where they are. And where are people? If they're a kid, they're in school. If they are an adult, they're at work. So my feeling is GEICO, our power company, government offices, every major business ought to say, in the same way as we're helping smokers to quit, you help them by, first of all, having a non-smoking environment so people are really encouraged to get away from it. You help them in any way that you can, but why not make the same kind of help available for people who want to lose weight, want to get healthier by getting away from the animal products? And that's what GEICO did. We're really grateful. We published the results, by the way, in scientific journals. And just one more thing, by the way, if I can mention this, John, the last publication that's coming out very shortly looks at depression and anxiety. So we're not just talking about cholesterol, we're talking about how you feel. And what we discovered is that mood improves as well. This may not surprise you, but when people get the junk out of their diet, they feel better. Absenteeism at work reduced. So it was good all the way around.
I remember a study you did a few years ago that compared the costs, the medical costs, attributable to tobacco consumption, which of course are enormous, to the medical costs attributable to meat. And as I recall, the two numbers were comparable.
Yeah, the thing about it is that, and ever diminishing number of people are smokers, but we've still got more than 9 out of 10 Americans are eating meat. And so what does that do? That means you're at higher risk of a heart attack, and along the way you might have surgery, which is very, very, very expensive. I'm talking about bypass surgery or angioplasty. You might have diabetes as a result. Meat eating is going to increase the risk of diabetes a couple-fold, two or three-fold. A person with diabetes isn't on one medicine. They're on two or three medicines for their diabetes, one, two, three, four medicines for their blood pressure. They're on a statin as well. All of that costs a phenomenal amount of money. The average person who comes into my office with diabetes is taking between $3,000 and $5,000 worth of medication in a single year. You multiply that by the 100 million Americans who either have diabetes or pre-diabetes now, you're talking about real money. That's the bad news. But, John, I want to share some really good news. And that is, I have been tracking meat eating in the United States. The USDA does report how much meat people eat. And for anybody who's thought, you know, this is all gloom and doom, we'll never be able to turn this battleship. Well, the battleship is turning right before our very eyes. Here are the numbers. Back in 1909, the U.S. Department of Agriculture started for the first time to track Americans' meat eating habits. The average American ate 123.9 pounds of meat. That's per person per year, 1909. It rose and rose and rose, and by the year 2004, we were at 201.5 pounds of meat. In other words, we went up from basically 124 to well over 200, the average American eating 75 pounds more meat every person every year. But in that year, 2004, something happened. It sort of stabilized, and in 2005, it had dropped. In 2006, 2007, 2008, 2009, it's been dropping about 1% every year. So it's not your imagination. You talk to people, and more people are becoming vegetarian and vegan than ever before. And a health food store, which used to be a tiny little place playing folk music with dusty products, nowadays they're big, they're beautiful, and they are packed with customers who either are vegetarian or vegan or are sort of semi-going in that direction. They're buying things that aren't animal products, and that's a huge change. So in the past decade or so, meat eating is dropping about 1% every year. That's the good news. When people know, they make changes for themselves, they make changes for their families, that's good for the animals, it's good for the earth, and it's darn good for your coronary arteries.
It is a tremendous global effort that's needed to shift our diets personally and collectively into a much healthier direction. The medical costs are one reason, but so are the environmental costs. The amount of greenhouse gases we know that are emitted by livestock production are greater, according to the Food and Agriculture Organization of the UN, than all of those attributable to transportation. There are so many ways that moving towards a plant-strong diet helps us personally to be healthier, helps the world to be a healthier place. And you have been, for so long, Neil, a leader in this movement. It's a joy to bring your work and your light to our audience and to see it reach more and more people every year.
Well, that's kind of you to say, but I want to send it right back to you, John, and to you, Ocean, because you're doing two things. A, you're inspiring people. You're getting their attention. You're helping them to realize that this is doable. We can make changes. But then you're also giving them the tools to do it. And you've been doing it for years with your wonderful books. And I've heard you speak more times than I can remember. And every single time you tell it like it is and you're reaching people, you're saving their lives and you're saving the planet. And I know all of us are just thrilled to know you, John.
Thank you.
We've been talking with Dr. Neil Barnard, founder and president of the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine and best-selling author of Power Foods for the Brain and 14 other books. Dr. Barnard, your message is clear, it's concise, it's compelling, and it's so vitally important to our lives and to the future of life on this planet. We want to thank you for your vision, for your impeccable research, and for your insights. It's been a pleasure to share this time with you and to share your wisdom with our listeners today in the Food Revolution Summit.
Well, thank you, and good luck to everything that you're doing.
This concludes our interview, but our work is just getting started. If you feel excited by what you just heard and want to share it with other people in your life, If you want permanent access to 23 more amazing presentations and transcripts, then we have an offer to share. You can get a download and a transcript of the entire Food Revolution Summit, plus a huge collection of bonus resources. If you like, you can also get CDs, members-only courses, and a lot more. This empowerment package is available for a major discount between now and the end of the summit. For more information, please visit foodrevolution.org/empowerment. Again, that's foodrevolution.org/empowerment. Thanks so much for joining us in the Food Revolution. And now we have a pre-recorded message from Linda Watkins, age 59, from Colorado. Linda is one of the millions of people whose lives have been touched by the work of Dr. Neil Barnard. I asked Linda if she'd be willing to share a few words with us. This is what she had to say.
Hi, my name is Linda. I'm 59 years old, and this is my Food Revolution story. When I was 17, I had open-heart surgery to correct a birth defect. Since then, I have been regularly monitored as a cardiac patient. Antibiotic treatment was required prior to any dental work or surgery. Over the years, I have been diagnosed with scarlet fever, rheumatic fever, congestive heart failure, atrial flutter, mitral valve prolapse, tricuspid valve prolapse, and pulmonary hypertension. I had tried to help my heart disease with a low-carb diet, which was popular at the time, but that only gave me new complications. Then about a year and a half ago, my husband had watched Dr. Neil Barnard's 21-day Kickstart presentation on PBS, and he mentioned that he would like us to try it. He then briefly explained the program to me, and I immediately objected. What are we going to eat? We can't just eat plants. After viewing the show, though, I decided to give it a try for 21 days. Our kitchen was cleared out of animal products in short order. After the first full week, I was actually surprised at how much better I felt. I really had more energy. The transition away from animal products was easier than expected, and we've continued eating this way ever since. While I was by no means sedentary, I started to increase my activity level, especially walking. A few months later, in March 2012, it was time for my annual visit to the cardiologist, which included current blood work. After explaining our change to a plant-based diet, he approved, but said he wanted to monitor me on it. My cholesterol has always been within normal ranges, but it has now gone down a few points lower. It was very noteworthy that the year before, at my 2011 visit, the cardiologist had diagnosed me with atrial flutter. He now stated that he didn't hear anything to be concerned about, saying everything sounded good. The atrial flutter was gone. Next year's annual checkup was then scheduled. I just went to that visit in March 2013, and again he found no problems, not even any leakage from the valves. He said to me that he would still like to check me one more time in 2014. And then he said, "But it looks like you have cured your heart disease." I looked at him and I said, "Don't you mean controlled my heart disease?" He smiled and said, "No, I said cured. I wish more people would do what you have done for yourself with diet and exercise." I was astonished. These were words I had never, ever expected to hear. I am continually discovering delicious new plant-based recipes from cookbooks and other sources, much to my husband's delight. How could I ever have said, "What are we going to eat?" The possibilities are endless, not to mention the benefits.
And now here's another pre-recorded testimonial. This is from Gina Bonanno-Limos, age 43, from Yorba Linda, California. Gina participated in our 2013 summit, and what she learned had quite an impact on her. She wanted to share it, so this is her message, straight from her to you.
My name is Gina Bonanno-Limos, and this is my Food Revolution story. I'm a 43-year-old mother of two, and I have never been in better health or had more energy in my entire life. I'll admit this wasn't always the case. Since childhood, I've struggled with colds and flus, debilitating allergies, asthma, strep throat, you name it. I mean, it kept me from going to school and from being with my friends. And my health issues continued and then worsened in my 20s after I had my first child. And I began having sinus infections anywhere from 4 to 6 times a year. And they would last for weeks and weeks before I'd give in and I'd get antibiotics and steroids. Then I started suffering with dangerously low blood pressure, and I developed adult onset cystic acne, which is so gross. And so finally, in my mid to late 20s, I decided I'd had enough. I just was sick and tired of being sick and tired, and I went on this mission to change my health, and I began studying everything I could get my hands on regarding nutrition and fitness. And although I was very physically fit, I would lift weights 5 to 6 days a week, and I ate what most Americans consider to be extremely healthy, all low-fat foods, lots of chicken and turkey and fish, but my health problems just persisted on into my 30s, and then finally, after more than 40 years of suffering, something incredible happened. I went to have coffee with a friend, and she introduced me to the idea of a plant-based diet. And I'll admit, although it made perfect sense, the science was there, and I made some small changes, it wasn't until I listened to the Food Revolution Summit in 2013 that it just clicked for me. And I made the full changes, and my health changed dramatically and within a very short period of time. So everyone asked me what it was that had the biggest impact, and I have to say it was the phenomenal knowledge that I gathered from the Food Revolution Summit speakers. It just really was the impetus for such a major change in my life and diet. They opened my eyes to so many things that I was completely unaware of. I couldn't believe I hadn't heard this stuff before. And in particular, the fact that I was eating what mainstream media had brainwashed me into thinking was quote-unquote healthy. And this was based on a very corrupt industry and healthcare system. So now I am ecstatic to report that not only have all of my health issues all but vanished, but I haven't even had so much as the sniffles in more than 15 months. And this is while everyone around me is dropping like flies from the recent flu outbreak. I also no longer need coffee in the afternoon to get me past that, you know, 2 to 3 p.m. fatigue, and I have more energy than I need. And in July of last year, just a few months after making these changes, I had a follow-up visit with a hormone specialist that I started seeing at the beginning of the year. And without any medications, any hormones, she informed me that based on my blood results, that my health markers had all improved, and she said, and I quote, that I had reversed the aging process by changing my diet, and I was no longer perimenopausal. So how cool is that? I have to tell you, this experience had such a profound impact on me, so much in fact that I actually made the decision that after 20 years in my career, I decided to change careers, and I'm now studying to be a health coach so I can help others enjoy long, healthy lives, free of disease, illness, drugs, all that yuck. So I am so incredibly grateful for the Food Revolution Summit and for the empowerment package I got last year, which is awesome. This message is life-changing. I'm absolute proof of that. And for anyone who's listening right now, I just want to tell you, you can change your life. You can change your world. This stuff is real. It absolutely works. And I will be forever grateful and inspired to help spread this message of hope and healing to anyone who's willing to listen. So thank you, thank you, thank you.
If you'd like to express your opinions on what you've been hearing and find out what other people are saying, you can post and engage in the comments section at the bottom of our broadcast page. Remember to refresh the page so you can see all the latest comments. Our next presentation will be an interview with dietitian and best-selling author Brenda Davis. It starts at the top of the hour, followed an hour after that by Dr. T. Colin Campbell. Until then, here's some music from our friend Bruce Beckvar.